Well, it's a singular significance in the life of the Catholic Church in its a move by the Holy Father to try and accommodate within the Catholic Church a church from the Reformed tradition which will include all of its patrimony, that is, its ways of living, its faith and its life, its worship, within full communion within the Catholic Church.
It's quite a bold step, though, isn't it? I mean, I believe, as far as I'm aware, that it's the first time that the Catholic Church has opened its doors to so wide a group of Protestants in this way. I mean, is it essentially the creation of a little Anglican church within the Catholic Church?
We wouldn't call it that, and it's essentially a way of allowing a group of faithful from the Anglican Church to retain some of their own, what's being called their own Anglican patrimony, their spiritual tradition. That's their ways of worshipping, their particular pastoral forms of ministry within the life of the Catholic Church, but not only to facilitate that, but also, as the Pope calls it, to be a mutual exchange of gifts to enable not only those who are entering into full communion with the Church to benefit from the riches that are in the Catholic tradition, but also to allow the Catholic Church to experience some of the riches that have led to authentic life and worship within the Anglican Church over the past few hundred years.
How is it going to be decided which of those traditions, that liturgy, that prayer, and other liturgical traditions are going to be acceptable and in conformity with the Catholic Church? Presumably there's going to have to be some committee to decide all this.
Well, of course, it'll be for the Ordinary and the Governing Council of the Ordinariate to petition the Congregation for Divine Worship and other appropriate curial departments regarding those aspects which they regard as being part of their Anglican patrimony that they wish to retain within the Catholic Church and their communion within the Catholic Church. So some of those elements will of course be liturgical, but there'll be other aspects such as their pastoral practice and involvement of laity and decision in synodal government that they will also probably wish to include within the life of the Ordinariate. But those things will have to be discerned and gradually worked out in time by the Ordinary, by the Governing Council, by the community of the Ordinariate, with the consent and the approval of the appropriate Vatican dicasteries.
And what kind of governing structure will this Ordinariate have, and do we have any idea who will head it, for instance?
Well, the governing structure is laid out in the Apostolic Constitution, Anglicae Norum Caetibus, and the accompanying general norms, and the Ordinary, of course, plays a key role in this. The Ordinary can be either a bishop or a priest, and he will be assisted by a governing council. And the governing council, over half of which must be elected by the priests of the Ordinariate, will have its own constitution, and a constitution that the new Ordinary and the governing council will approve in the first instance.
Could the Ordinariate eventually, in the future, have its own seminaries, its own religious house? Could it expand in this way? Is that envisaged?
It's envisaged certainly that the Ordinariate would have houses of religious, female and male religious. Whether or not they have their own seminary in the fullness of time will be another matter. There's an issue of capacity here, clearly, in creating those institutions which are necessary for the normal life of any part of the Catholic Church. So in the first instance, priests for the Ordinariate will be trained alongside other seminarians in the seminaries of England and Wales. Who knows in time if the Ordinariate grows to a size where a seminary would be deemed suitable, this may be a possibility. But given that we have quite considerable capacity with our own seminaries, I'm sure that simply from the point of view of efficient use of resources, that they will continue to work with the existing seminaries.
Now, you talked about size, and this brings me on to my next question. We have three former Anglican bishops who are lining up to become members of the Ordinariate. Are there a lot of other Anglicans waiting to become part of it? Do you have any idea at all about what kind of numbers we could be looking at over the next few years?
Okay, well, that's a very difficult assessment to make, as you understand. What we do know is that we're expecting approximately 50 clergy, former Anglican clergy, in the first stage of the Ordinariate to be received into full communion with the Church and to seek ordination as Catholic priests. And we understand that there is approximately 35 groups, many of which are attached to those clergy. We can't be certain of the size of the groups, range from anything from 15 to 20 to 40, 50 and even greater numbers. numbers who have indicated a firm desire to enter into the Ordinariate.
Now, the Pope's apostolic constitution to make provision for this Ordinariate was seen at the time it was issued by some Anglicans as a move to encourage defections from the Anglican community, particularly at a time when it's facing divisions there, and as an anti-ecumenical move. Are these criticisms still being aired by some Anglicans? Is there still unease about this move?
No, I think what people are anticipating is a lot of the practical difficulties that come from people who, in good conscience, in good faith, decide to make this journey of faith into full communion with the Catholic Church. In the establishment of any new community, there will be difficulties over the use of churches, over those facilities that they might want to continue to use when they're Catholics. So there could be some difficulties over practicalities, but I don't think it's perceived in any way as an anti-ecumenical measure. In fact, quite the contrary, the Holy Father sees this as a new way of ecumenism in the sense of trying to receive within the fullness of the Catholic Church the riches and traditions of other Christian denominations. In this particular case, it's the Anglican Church within the spiritual tradition of the Catholic Church. So it's a way of incorporating, it's a way of recognising the gifts of others and trying to bring those into the fullness of the Church.
These Anglicans who are seeking to become members of the Ordinariate, and when they talk about their reasons for having resigned as Anglicans, I'm talking here about clergy obviously, is it mainly the Anglican Union's decision to ordain women bishops and allowing same-sex marriages that has prompted them to take this step, or are there other factors? What reasons do they give?
I think you'll find that the majority of the clergy and people that are seeking entry into the Ordinariate, their fundamental desire has been for many years to seek corporate reunion of the Anglican Church with the Catholic Church. That's been a desire of both the Catholic Church and many those working for ecumenism with the Church of England for many years. And I think what's happened now is that there's a realization that the Holy Father would like to facilitate those who have that genuine desire within the norms that have been established by the Ordinariate. Because clearly, institutionally, the Anglican Church has taken certain decisions, particularly regarding the ordination of women, it's just one of them, which institutionally makes that corporate full reunion a little more distant than was previously hoped for.
You mentioned this earlier, and it's been pointed out by many, of course, that one of the biggest problems for Anglican clergy who want to become Catholics, become part of this Ordinariate, is the economic issue, the funding issue. Who's going to pay for them, those who become Catholic priests? Where will they live? And how are these problems being tackled?
Well, they're being tackled very much at a local level by each diocesan bishop, where there are groups seeking to be received into the Church. There's already been a fund established for the Ordinariate. The Catholic bishops of England and Wales have donated £250,000 towards that fund, and there are donations coming in already without any promotion of the Ordinariate or seeking for funds. Quite considerable sums are coming in from individuals, from communities, from charities to help support the Ordinariate. But clearly on the long term there is the anticipation that the Ordinariate, just like a diocese, will be self-financing, but that's a medium to long term aim, not a short term aim. So in the short term it's necessary for local dioceses to try and find accommodation for priests who are coming into the church, for churches that can be used and shared with local Catholic communities, and just practical issues like the possibility of funded chaplaincy work that can help support financially clergy with families, like hospital chaplaincy, prison chaplains, where there are often reasonable stipends associated with that work. So local diocesan bishops are investigating all those possibilities at this moment so that we can assist the priests of the Ordinariate and their communities to be established as quickly as possible.
Now, you talked about quickly. In fact, after Pope Benedict made his announcement in 2009 to set up this Ordinariate, things have moved amazingly fast, especially the ordination of the three Anglican former bishops. Why this speed?
Well, the speed is a recognition of the spiritual needs of the communities that are seeking communion. Obviously, the Ordinariate was only made known in November of 2009 with the Apostolic Constitution, but many of those congregations will have longed for this possibility for many years beforehand and will have talked of it and explored the possibility of how they might move as a group into the Catholic Church. So the idea behind the Ordinariate has been around for some time. What the initiative of the Holy Father has achieved with the Apostolic Constitution is to allow this to take place in a structured and canonical way within the normal life of the Catholic Church, so that they will be distinctive and yet fully part of the Latin Rite Catholic Church and the Church in England and Wales.
And as far as the congregations are concerned, are we expecting big numbers?
Well, as I said previously, we know that there's approximately 35 groups that have indicated that that desire to enter into full communion. We can't be certain of the size of those groups because it's an individual decision. The numbers, in a sense, aren't important. It's the concept behind the Ordinariate that's important, which is this mutual exchange of gifts, this enriching in the life of the Anglican patron being brought into the Catholic Church, and the ability of so many who've yearned over many years to participate fully in the life of the Catholic Church while retaining some of their distinctive traditions to do so. That's the really exciting part of the Ordinariate.